Heavenly Father, we thank you for a good night's rest and awakening us this morning and protecting us from yesterday's storms. And as we take up the study this morning, we once again ask that you'd bless us with the presence of your Holy Spirit, that you'd overrule my human thinking, my words, and present to us words from on high. We ask that you prepare our hearts and minds to receive the message you have for us this morning, that you'd pour your latter rain out upon us by opening our understanding to your word. We ask for continued protection and over the work we're doing on live streaming and recording. And we thank you for all these things in Jesus' name. Amen. I want to move away from Palmoni today, but I want to remind us what we're doing here. We're saying that in 1989, which was the time of the end for this generation, that the dirt brush man arrived, who is the Lion of Judah. And he began to open the prophetic message for this generation that was destined to test it with an increase of knowledge. But then when Islam was restrained on 9/11, 2001, there is an emphasis now also of Palmoni in terms of his work in leading us back to these charts, these foundational truths, which leads God's people to an investigation of the time prophecies, and suddenly there are truths about these time prophecies that were not even recognized by the pioneers. Right here on 9/11 with the restraint of Islam, we're also seeing Christ as the Alpha and Omega, because he's confirming that the beginning of Adventism is illustrating the end of Adventism. He's confirming these reform lines. And so we've been kind of tracking this in, he opened up the reform lines in 1989. Then by 1995, they're being presented publicly. By 2004, the 2520 is presented publicly, and it opens the door to further investigation of these truths. And we're going to look here at 2010 in a moment. So one of the things that we're doing in this is showing the different revelations of Christ, because the 144,000 are going to follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. And as he goeth through this reform line, he appears to his people in different aspects of his character. So I want to show you something that I never found out until after yesterday's presentation about the 220, which we're saying is represents restoration. Because the decree in 457, the third decree, the third of three decrees, from the going forth of that decree, it was to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. And we're noting that from the captivity of Manasseh in 677 to 457 is 220 years. And from the time that the waters abated, 190 days after the rain began, there was 220 days after that before Noah was told to go and restore the population of the earth, both mankind and animal kind. And that when Esau and Jacob were coming together, Jacob sent ahead of his party a gift of 220 goats and 220 sheep, thus showing that Jacob was wanting to restore his relationship with Esau, while at the same time emphasizing judgment. As of course this emphasized judgment, because judgment is represented as a selection between the sheep and the goats by Christ. But yesterday, or day before yesterday, I received a question that I've received before from people, and it's a question I really don't have an answer for, but I'm going to tell you the question and the answer that I give. In your notes, we've looked at this a few times from Seventh-day Adventist Bible Commentary, Volume 7, page 971. In the second paragraph there, it says, after these seven thunders uttered their voices, the injunction comes to John as to Daniel in regard to the little book, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered. These relate to future events which will be disclosed in their order. So in this same passage, if you drop down to the fourth paragraph, Sister White says, the special light given to John, which was expressed in the seven thunders, was a delineation of events which would transpire under the first and second angels' messages. So Sister White is saying two contradicting things there. They're not contradicting, but they're in opposition to one another. She says the seven thunders represent future events that will be disclosed in their order, and the events that took place under the first and second angels' message. So for me, whatever the seven thunders are, they represent events. Because when she talks about first and second angels' message, she says events. And when she talks about the seven thunders representing the future, she emphasizes events. And in that second paragraph, she compares the sealing up of the seven thunders by John in chapter 10 with the sealing up of the book of Daniel by Daniel in chapter 12. Okay, so we know that the seven thunders are unsealed in Revelation 22, just before the close of probation. It says, "Write, seal not the prophecies of this book, for the time is at hand," in verse 9 of Revelation 22. There comes a time when the prophecy in Revelation that has been sealed up is unsealed. The only prophecy in Revelation that's been sealed up is the seven thunders. So the time is at hand to unseal the seven thunders. And the next verse is, "He that is righteous, let him be righteous still," the close of probation. So just before the close of probation, the seven thunders is to be unsealed. And according to Sister White here, it's going to parallel the unsealing of the book of Daniel in 1798. And that's what we're saying, is that in 1989, whatever the seven thunders represent is unsealed. So the question comes, some people say the seven thunders are the events that took place between 1840 and 1844. But this quote here is saying it represents seven events that transpired during the history of the first and second angel's message. And the first angel's message arrives in 1798. So you can argue that the history of 1798 to 1844, when the third angel's message arrives, that it's in this history is where you should see these seven events that are typified by the seven thunders. But Revelation 10, the structure of Revelation 10, when the mighty angel comes down out of heaven and puts one foot upon the land and one foot upon the sea, and he has a book of Daniel open in his hand, which John is going to go take and eat, and it's going to be sweet in his mouth. Well, the message of Daniel became sweet for the Millerites on August 11, 1840, with the confirmation of the year-day principle. So if you look at Revelation 10, the structure of Revelation 10, and there's about three references where you can show this, is the history of 1840 to 1844. Just in John alone, when he eats the little book, it's 1840, and it becomes bitter in his stomach, it's 1844. The angel comes down in 1840. The chapter ends in 1844. So you can argue that when Sister White's commenting on the seven thunders in Revelation 10, that perhaps you should relate to the history she's referring to 1840 to 1844. So people ask me, because in this presentation, people have asked me this in the past, but here recently, a couple of days ago, a brother asked me, he says, "I heard you in the past say that the seven thunders are seven events from 1840 to 44, but in this presentation you said it's seven events from 1798 to 1844. And so my response to him was, is, I don't know that one. There are some people that teach that the seven thunders from 1798 to 1844 are the seven time prophecies that were fulfilled in that history, and there were seven time prophecies. And they argue that all those prophecies were events as well. But I don't go there. What I'm trying to show you here now is, for me, I can show it either way. And I'm not so sure that that isn't the Lord's intent. Okay, if you're going to say that the seven thunders is 1798 to 1844, then I would say the time of the end is a primary event. This is the arrival of the Lion of the Tribe of Judah. The confirmation of the year-day principle is a primary event. Second, the introduction of the chart that is going to test the Protestants in May of 1842 is a primary event. The Protestants beginning to close their doors is a primary event, June of 1842. The first disappointment is a primary event, the tarrying time. The midnight cry, primary event. And of course, the door closing on 1844. So I can see seven thunders typified there. And these events are going to be repeated in this history to the very letter. They relate to future events that are going to be disclosed in their order. All right. But I'm not threatened if you say, okay, because the structure of Revelation 10 is 1840 to 44, that this is the first event, and that this is the second event, and that this is the third event, and that this is the fourth event. And if you're going to do it that way, then another event that is marked here, which seems significant to me, is the proclamation of the second angel's message, a call out of Babylon in the summer of 1844. So that could be the fifth event, and this the sixth, and this the seventh. Maybe there is only one specific application of the seven thunders. But for me, this one seems very valid from the perspective of the structure of Revelation 10. But this one seems very valid because in the commentary where we're looking at the seven thunders, Sister White makes an emphasis that the seven thunders are sealed up as the book of Daniel was sealed up, thus emphasizing the time of the end when the unsealing is going to take place. So it seems to me that one of the events in this history should be the time of the end. But I don't think it's necessary to fight that battle. And what I mean now by that is in the story of Nehemiah, which is the story of the fourth decree, which is the story of the finishing of the work of rebuilding Jerusalem, we looked at yesterday that we have the first, second, and third decree, and then 49 years until the streets and walls are finished in troublous time, and we've shown that this history here is typified repeatedly. With Passover to Pentecost, both in the beginning of ancient Israel and the end of ancient Israel, in the Jubilee cycle. But we also looked at down here, this is kind of, I know that people live stream aren't going to get this, but this is Nehemiah's 52 days. So what I'm saying is, this history, right at the very end of this history, in the very final year of this history, we have this history repeated in Nehemiah's 52 days. He has the first 3 days when he's evaluating the city of Jerusalem, and then 49 days to finish building the walls. So in this final fulfillment of this 49-year history, or even longer if you go back to the first decree, you have it repeated in 52 days. So the Lord does that. That's a signature of the Lord. So what I'm saying is, I'm not threatened if we see two manifestations of the seven thunders in this history, because we can see two manifestations of this 49 years in one history. Okay. But now I want to show you something that we didn't share yesterday that is not only about Palmoni, but it's about the Alpha and Omega. Now, if you have been following the argument of the 2520 in Adventism, you know that in Isaiah 7, both starting points for both 2520s are set forth in the 65-year time prophecy, and that in the book of Daniel, both ending points are marked for both those 2520s, and that the duration of those 2520s are set forth by Moses in Leviticus 26. So you have three witnesses to the validity of this with Moses, Daniel, and Isaiah. And then in Daniel chapter 8, when Gabriel's given the command to make Daniel understand the vision of the evening and mornings, what Gabriel does is he takes Daniel to the last end of the indignation and gives him a second witness for 1844. There were two time prophecies he's teaching in Daniel 8 that conclude in 1844. And it wasn't simply that the second witness to the year 1844 was given Daniel. It was much broader than that, because the question of verse 13 is, how long shall be the vision concerning paganism and papalism that are going to trample down the sanctuary and the host? And the 2300 days is talking about the sanctuary being restored on October 22nd, 1844. And the 2520 is talking about the host being restored on October 22nd, 1844. So the end, which is October 22nd, 1844, is identifying both these time prophecies. Okay, so when you get to this understanding and you start seeing that this 220 years is a symbol of restoration, then you see the beginning of the 2520 in 677 and the beginning of the 2300 are tied together by this 220 years. That's tying together the end at another level, and it's cool. But what we talked about that yesterday, what's cooler than that is this. When is this prophecy of 2300 years fulfilled? Pardon me? The 10th day of the 7th month. How many days are there in a biblical month?
30.
So 7 times 30 is what?
210.
And 10 days to 210 is what? 220. So it's 220, a symbolic 220 in the 10th day of the 7th month. And therefore, you have a 220 at the end of this time prophecy and a 220 at the beginning of both these time prophecies. And that's the Alpha and Omega putting his signature on this. Now, this is definitely symbolic. 10th day of the 7th month, I'm definitely counting those 10 days twice. Okay, 7 months times 30 is 210, but then I'm also going to take the 10 days and throw that into the mix. So it's symbolic. And it's not really a period of time, it is a day. It's October 22nd, 1844. But when you understand Palmoni and Alpha and Omega, you can see that he's put a 220 right here on October 22nd, 1844, that has also been illustrated here. And that's pretty profound. Human beings couldn't do that. Human beings couldn't do that. So if you go to page 2 of your notes, we're going to switch gears here now. We've looked at these. We're now going to look at 2010. In terms of the work of the line of the tribe of Judah, unsealing the message for this generation. And a couple presentations back, we looked at the fact that Ezekiel was given the same vision as Isaiah and John and all the other prophets. And what Ezekiel saw, among other things, were these wheels within the wheels in the sanctuary. And what I'm saying is those wheels within the wheels represent links in a chain, okay? And that the links are the 3-1 combination. So we've looked at the first quote there from early writings that Sister White says William Miller was given the commencement to the chain of truth. And he tells us what the commencement for the chain of truth were that he was given. And it was 3 starting points, 677, starting point of the 2520, 457, starting point of the 2300 days, and 508, starting point of the 1290 and 1335. So what we're saying here is at the beginning of Adventism, they were given the commencement to the chain of truth, and at the end of Adventism, we're given the links in the chain. And with the links of in the chain, you can put the chain together. Okay, and it says here, the bottom of page 2, the first link, the message in regard to the fall of Babylon must be given. God's people are to understand in regard to the angel who is to lighten the whole world with its glory while he cries mightily with the loud voice, Babylon the great is fallen. The solemn events which are now taking place belong to a series of events in the chain of history, the first link of which is connected with Eden. So where's the first link? And what is it? It's events. And based upon commentary on Ezekiel's vision on the top of your page, it says, the prophecies which the great I Am has given in his words, uniting link after link in the chain of events, from eternity in the past to eternity in the future, tell us where we are today in the possession of the ages. These links are going to identify the end of the world for us, if we apply them right. And then on the bottom of page 2, it says, from the destruction of Jerusalem, Christ passed on rapidly to the greater event, the last link in the chain of this earth's history, the coming of the Son of Man, Son of God in majesty and glory. So what I'm saying is that what the Lord opened up in 1989 was the link. And the link is the 3-1 combination of Bible prophecy. And it begins in Eden, and this is the link in Eden. And of course, this down here is the link that leads to the second coming of Christ. These are not the only 3-1 combinations in this history. In 2010, the presentation on the prophetic chain began to be shared in Adventism. And in Oklahoma, we divided it up over several presentations. There was three other brothers and myself that were sharing this. And we shared the chain in terms of what we're going to do today, showing the chain at a prophetic level. But the different speakers, they went through and they'd deal with just this link. And then the next preacher would deal with this link and this link. And we went through the various links. And we just began to scratch the surface of the light that is in this chain. But what I'm wanting you to see here, if you will, if you look at your notes or look at the board, is I'm saying that the link is the 3-1 combination. The three angels' messages followed by the fourth angel's message. That's the link. And the first link is found in Eden, and I'm saying that the symbols of the 3-1 combination in Eden is Adam, Eve, and Christ, because they were in the Garden of Eden together. But these 3-1 combinations, the third is always followed by a disappointment. And after they're driven out of the garden, we have the story of Abel. And then it goes to the next link. And I'm not saying that I'm putting all the links in this chain. This is an infinite revelation. So there's some of the links I haven't recognized and some that I haven't recognized. It would be too burdensome to try to put everything in here. In the next link, we're identifying the time of Noah and his three sons. Of course, the flood is a disappointment. Being driven out of the garden is a disappointment. And after the flood, we jump to the time of Moses, Miriam and Aaron, followed by Joshua. Shem, Japheth, and Ham are followed by Noah. And from the time of Moses, we go to Eli, Hophni, and Phinehas. Ark captured. Shiloh, the punishment of Shiloh takes place, followed by Samuel, who anoints Saul and David, and then comes Solomon. The kingdom is divided, is the disappointment. Rehoboam, the Lord is choosing Judah, Rehoboam, the southern kingdom, as opposed to the northern kingdom. These first three kings lead into the last three kings, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah. Jerusalem destroyed is the disappointment, and these three kings are followed by the fourth king of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar leads into these three kings, Cyrus, Darius, Artaxerxes. Of course, this is a disappointment. These are the three decrees. This is the disappointment of Ezra when he saw how few people came out of Babylon. And the fourth decree of Artaxerxes is Nehemiah's decree in this history. And this begins the 2300-year prophecy. And in the middle of the 2300-year prophecy, we have a 3-1 combination in the time of Christ. John, the Sanhedrin, Christ, of course, the cross, is followed by a disappointment. and then leads to Pentecost. But this 2,300-year prophecy is leading to our history. The first angel's message, 1798. Second angel's message, 1842. Third angel's message, 1844. Fourth angel's message, 9/11, 2001. The disappointment, October 22nd, 1844. So what I'm saying is these are the links in the chain that we're going to look at today that begins in Eden and goes to the second coming of Christ. And that this is the work of Christ as the Lion of the tribe of Judah unfolding this truth. He's bringing to a climax the work that he began with William Miller. He gave William Miller this commencement points for this prophetic chain. And here at the end of the world, he's putting this chain completely together. So we're just going to look briefly at this chain. If you go to page 4 of your notes, we're going to try to show you how this chain is tied together. Here, Adam and Eve and Christ are all of the same family, and they're the father of mankind. Same family. And there might be a way better to say father of mankind, because Eve isn't the father, but they're the creators of mankind. Christ created mankind, but Adam and Eve, at a secondary level, created mankind. So I'm just going to leave that blank, but they're all the same family. Disappointment. Then we have the story of Abel, which is still part of the same family. So although there is a break in the 3-1 combination here, from here to here, we got a link from family to family. All right. And then when we move to Shem, Japheth, and Ham, same family. They're all family members. So is Noah, same family member. And they're still also if you can understand what I'm saying, they're still the father of mankind. Okay, because mankind's coming down through these four people, just like it came down through Christ and Adam and Eve. So you have the link after the disappointment of the flood. You have the link from family to family, but you also have the link from this family to this family. You follow me? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's tied together. Then you get to Miriam, Aaron, and Moses, and are they all the same family?
Yes.
Okay, they're all same family. Are they family? Are they the father of mankind? Nope. There's a change now. They're the leaders of God's people, right? And is Joshua the father of mankind?
No.
Is he a family member?
Yes.
Yes. He's part of Israel. It's 12 tribes of Israel. They're all still family. So family, not family. But he's a leader. Is that right?
Yes.
So you have a connection here, a connection here, and a connection here, which connects you back to here. And that's what links in a chain do, right? Okay, now this chain, there's not enough room to keep going. It's coming down over here. The next 3-1 combination, Eli, Hophni, and Phinehas, are they family members?
Yes.
Okay, they're family. But what else are they?
They're leaders.
But what's going to happen in this history is the Lord's going to identify a new leader. So the family here, this link would go back over here. It would connect. The leaders would connect. And this connects with here. Are you seeing the connections? But it's changing as it goes through. Samuel now, as a leader who's followed these leaders, who's followed these leaders, okay, He's going to anoint new leaders, only these leaders are going to be kings. Okay, kings. Are they still family members?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a connection there. They're still Israel. But they're kings here. And, of course, Rehoboam is a king. So there's a connection between here and here. And as leaders, there's a connection between here and here and here and here. And as family, you can go back to here. Now remember, when Ezekiel sees his vision, he sees wheels within wheels. And Sister White says, when he first looked at these wheels within wheels, it was all confusion. But it turns into a very orderly picture after you begin to understand what it's doing. Okay. So after the kingdom is divided, this here, there's a connection here. These are the first three kings of Israel, and these are the last three kings in the history of ancient Israel. So there's a connection here with these kings just on first and last. You see Christ's signature of Alpha and Omega there. They're still leaders, but now this king, the fourth waymark, is going to be a pagan king. But there's still a connection, right? Still a king, but now it's changed to a pagan king. So these are the creators of mankind, and I'm saying that at a real generic level, and the creators of mankind. But family, and they go to family, and here it changes from creators to leaders, okay? And from leaders over here, it changed to kings. Now from kings, it's going to change to pagan king. But there's a connection. There's a link between all these 3-1 combinations. Are you following it? Okay, now once again, we're going to have to jump from here over to here. Pagan king Nebuchadnezzar leads to these three pagan kings. So there is a connection here back with over there. Of course, this is Artaxerxes 2 times here. So he's a pagan king. But here, these decrees are going to start the 2300-day prophecy. And now these, John, Sanhedrin, Christ, and Pentecost, these were decrees. I probably should explain this a little bit. These three decrees and this fourth decree, I'll put decrees here. The fourth decree ties in with the three decrees, which I haven't written out decrees there, but you follow me, that Cyrus, Darius, and Artaxerxes are the three decrees, okay? But these decrees now are going to change to prophecies for the arrival of John the Baptist was based upon the prophecy of Daniel. The Sanhedrin is a prophecy based upon Exodus, choosing the lamb that's going to be slain at Passover. And of course, the crucifixion is based upon prophecy, and Pentecost is based upon prophecy. And I'm saying that decrees are kingly decrees, are prefiguring godly decrees, and a prophecy is a godly decree. Okay, so there's a connection there. And these decrees, these three prophecies, connect with this prophecy of Pentecost, and these prophecies connect with three messages. And these messages are what? They're prophecies. Fourth angel's message connects with there. So you're seeing connections all the way through, right? Go to the next page of your notes. And we won't spend a lot of time here. I'm putting Eve as the symbol of the disappointment saying that it's Eve's disobedience that leads to the disappointment of them being driven out of the garden. Sometimes, most times, I will identify the disappointment as the flood. I'm identifying it here as Ham, immediately after the flood, simply because I'm trying to be consistent with the disappointments being represented by human beings. Here, the disappointment after the Red Sea, typically I would put the Red Sea experience with Pharaoh's army behind them and the Red Sea in front of them, but I'm pointing to Aaron's son, because I'm taking a link of the people that are the symbols of the disappointment, and Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu here when they're anointing the sanctuary and they bring in unholy fire. Eli, Hophni, and Phinehas, Ichabod, the child that was born of Phinehas that died at birth, who was named Ichabod, meaning the glory departed. Here would be Jeroboam that takes the northern 10 tribes and repeats the rebellion of Aaron with the two golden calves. That's a disappointment. Here now, it's changing a little bit. It's Babylon. They're being carried to Babylon. This is Ezra's disappointment. Disappointment of the cross. Disappointment of October 22nd, 1844. What I'm saying is when you have this chain in place, if you take just the disappointments in these histories and you bring them together line upon line, then they're going to teach what the final disappointment is all about. Okay, and I'm just isolating that one fact. When we close this presentation, we're going to look a little bit at the fourth angel's message and apply the line upon line. But what I'm saying is once you have this chain in place, the 3-1 combination being the link from Eden to the second coming of Christ, then you can isolate specific characteristics of the chain. And what we just did was we walked through and looked at the disappointments. And you bring all the disappointments together line upon line, and you're going to be describing the disappointment here at the end of the world. We'll look at the fourth angel's message to try to apply that so you see it more clearly. But let's go put another connection with the chain here. Each of these links are dispensations. By dispensations, I'm talking about the focus of worship. In this history, where were Adam and Eve worshiping?
In the garden.
They were worshiping face to face with Christ right here. But in the story of Abel, where were they worshiping? They were worshiping face to face with Christ in the garden, but Abel now at the gates of the garden. So there's a connection between garden and garden, but face to face is removed. Where before the flood were they worshiping?
At the gates of the garden.
At the gates of the garden. So we're connected here. This link's connected. But after the flood, where were they going to be worshiping? So there's a change here. Still about worship. It's about dispensation. So you can make this line. This is about dispensation to dispensation, but the dispensation is changing. This is face to face. It's in your notes. This is the gates of the garden. This is the gates of the garden, and now this is altar. Now, where are they going to be worshiping here? They're going to set aside the altar and set up the tent sanctuary, and this is the story of Moses, right? So there's a connection. It's still about the dispensation, where they're going to worship. But it's changing as it goes through history. And now they're at the tent. They're at the tent sanctuary here. And it's going to change to a new leader. It's still going to worship at the tent sanctuary. But where is that tent sanctuary going to end up as it's handed off to Joshua? It ends up at Shiloh, still the tent sanctuary. And of course, this goes over here to Shiloh. And what's going to happen at Shiloh? The dispensation is going to change. The ark is going to be captured. And now there's a movement underway in this history. They're still they're worshiping now no longer at Shiloh. They're in transition to Jerusalem over here, where now it's not going to be the tent sanctuary. It's going to be the permanent sanctuary that's built by Solomon, right? So you're seeing the dispensation change as we go down through history. And where is this permanent sanctuary built? In Jerusalem. But in this history, the one that is used to build this permanent sanctuary in Solomon, his son does what? Through his actions, he divides the kingdom. And in this history, the Lord chooses Judah and Jerusalem over Israel and the 10 northern tribes. So now the dispensation, let's say, the face-to-face to the gates of the garden to the altar, from the altar to the tent sanctuary, from the tent sanctuary into the promised land to Shiloh, and from Shiloh to Jerusalem. And now Jerusalem is being chosen in the sense of it's Judah in Jerusalem, it's the two northern tribes, as in contrast with the 10 northern tribes. And now Jerusalem, which was chosen by God, is going to be destroyed, and they're still going to be worshiping towards Jerusalem. Daniel directed his prayers towards the city of Jerusalem, but was the sanctuary there? It was destroyed. Okay, so this captivity, it's the Lord had still chosen Jerusalem, but now with the destruction of Jerusalem, they're carried into Babylon, but they're going to come out of Babylon for what purpose? To rebuild the second permanent temple. And it gets finished in 49 years with Nehemiah. But now, Jerusalem is going to what? It's going to be destroyed. And this time, what's being set up? What's the first thing that John said when he saw Jesus? Behold the Lamb of God, which taketh away the sins of the world. Now the dispensation is changing from Jerusalem to heavenly Jerusalem, the sanctuary in heaven. And when does the sanctuary in heaven begin to be operated? At Pentecost. The Pentecostal outpouring was the signal that the work in the heavenly sanctuary had begun. And now, from this history, there's going to be a change of dispensation to what? Judgment, October 22nd, 1844. And then in the fourth waymark in our history, what's the change of dispensation? Judgment of the living. Okay. So what do you see? You see the prophetic change. You see the links. I hope I'm not wrecking this for you, but this is the wheels within the wheels.
So how do you connect that one back to Eden?
How do you connect that one back to Eden?
It's from heaven to heaven.
The earth, when is the earth made new? You've brought it up and you have to answer. When is the earth made new?
After the earth's destroyed.
After the earth is destroyed, when?
After the third coming.
Okay, so we're going to bring this link over here. This is the fourth angel's message, the judgment of the living, right? And there's going to be a disappointment in this history. And associated with the disappointment, you find the number seven, right? So what's the number seven that's a disappointment in this history? Seven last plagues, okay? So the seven last plagues brings you to the 1,000 years millennium. And I know the 3-1 combination in this history. It's just not popping into my mind, and it leads you to the end of the 1,000 years and the earth made new. it takes you there. I'm just, you asked the question, and I haven't been back there since 2010, but it does. The 3-1 combination takes you all the way to the earth made new. I'm not remembering that part right now.
It's 9/11, Sunday law, close of probation, and then Christ returns.
That's it, but you need to, the brother says it's 9/11, Sunday law, Michael stands up, close of probation, 7 last plagues. But the 1,000 years is in there as well, leading you to the earth made new, which is Eden restored. So what I'm saying is the Lord in 2010 had the line of the tribe of Judah has taken what he began with William Miller, the commencement point in the chain of truth. He's given this generation what the link is. And by 2010, the subject that he began to open up in 1989, he's put together the entire links, all the links of the prophetic chain. For what purpose? Because here he's opening up an increase of knowledge that's going to test this generation. Therefore, this isn't just for our intellectual curiosity. This is light that he expects us to wrap our minds around with so that we can be benefited by the light here at the end of the world.
You have additions to each of the links, but on the last two, there's no addition. It's just gone from decree to prophecies, but there's no connecting link necessarily. You've connected between prophecy and messages, but couldn't under Pentecost, you could put an event, because Pentecost was an event, and that's what...
Prophecies are events.
Oh, okay.
The definition of prophecy is historical events were set before the people, and prophecy was seen to be a figurative delineation of events leading down to the close of this earth's history. So prophecy is events.
Okay.
Yeah, the sister here, for those that are watching live stream or on the recording, she's obviously got her sanctified imagination working on all this, and she's asking some detailed questions. And so be it. That's my emphasis here, is the Lord has opened up the prophetic chain, and as you look at it, the details that are connected with this chain are infinite. Okay, so you can ask questions now from here to eternity, and they're going to be valid questions, and some of them we may understand and some of them we don't, but what I'm doing here is just giving the basic flow of the prophetic chain. There's no way in one presentation or even several presentations that you can exhaust the truths in here, including what you're asking about, the various connections between each link. I know of other connections that I didn't put here, because this here, to someone that was watching this for the first time today, their heads are going to be swimming, okay? They're going to wonder what all these lines are. So this is too much for one presentation as it is. But if we've tried throwing all the details in there, it will even get more burdensome for the beginners, and probably too much even for those that aren't beginners. So what I want to do here to close is give an example of what this message is. In 1989, what the Lord opened up was the reform lines based upon Isaiah 28, line upon line, from here a little, there a little. Here's a prophetic line right here, this history. Here's a prophetic line from this history, line upon line, line upon line, from here a little, from there a little. So once you see this prophetic chain, once that link has been identified and established as the 3-1 combination, instead of stringing it out in a chain like we've done, we're to bring it line upon line, okay, over the top of each other. And when you do that, I'm going to give you an example of the kind of light that can be produced from this, and it's based upon this chain. And I've said more than once, I think, in this presentation, I'm aware of other links that we haven't put in this chain, and I know that I haven't seen all the links in scriptures. So this is just going to be a limited presentation of how this chain is beneficial to the student of prophecy. Okay, so based upon the chain that we put on the board, we're going to go through just the fourth of this chain. Abel He's worshiping at the gates of the Garden of Eden, but what Abel's story is it's the everlasting gospel. The first number four of the chain, and that's important because Jesus is the Alpha and Omega. He illustrates the end from the beginning, and he includes in that understanding of himself the rule of first mention. So approaching it this way, the first thing that is represented with Abel is the everlasting gospel. I will put enmity between the seed of Satan and the seed of Christ, Christ promises. And he will bruise his heel. Christ will bruise his heel at the cross, but he's going to crush Satan's head. And Sister White tells us that the everlasting gospel of the first angel's message is the same gospel that was preached in Eden. So Abel is a symbol of the everlasting gospel in this history. Whereas Noah, this is limited, but what comes down from Noah is the shut door, because these histories are always about a shut door, close of probation, and the covenant. The Lord is renewing his covenant here in the story of the flood with Noah. So from Noah, line upon line, what I'm doing here is I'm saying Abel's a symbol of the everlasting gospel, and Noah's a symbol of the covenant and the shut door. And Joshua, when Joshua's going into the promised land, still the tent sanctuary, but you see in the story of bringing down Joshua, a symbol of the fall of Babylon, Jericho. The fall of Jericho is prefiguring the fall of Babylon at the end of the world, and the fall of Jericho takes place in the sounding of the seventh trumpet. So with Joshua, we're seeing the sounding of the seventh trumpet and the fall of Babylon. With Noah, we're seeing the closed door, the covenant. With Abel, we're seeing the everlasting gospel. And other things. In the story of Samuel, we're seeing the story of self-supporting work. Okay, the anointed, appointed leaders of Israel were Eli, Hophni, and Phinehas, but the Lord is setting aside the chosen leadership in this history and appointing Samuel as the leader when he sets aside the chosen leadership here. Okay, so I'm identifying Samuel as a symbol of self-supporting work in our history because the Lord always works that way. He always is forced, due to Gadol, due to pride, to set aside the ordained leadership and take the fishermen and those that come from the common walks of life to finish the work for that particular generation. Samuel's a symbol of that. In the fourth waymark of this history, Rehoboam, there wasn't anything righteous about Rehoboam, but what the Lord is doing here, he's choosing Jerusalem and Judah in contrast with the 10 tribes of the north, all right? And if you look closely at this history, you can show very definitely that in 1798, when the Millerites are being raised up, you have an illustration of the story of Elijah, okay? Elijah was in hiding for 3.5 years while Jezebel reigned, and this is typifying the 1260 years of papal rule. So when Elijah comes back and goes to Carmel with Ahab, this is the Millerite history of the Millerites coming to Carmel, coming to the midnight cry, in contrast with the prophets of Baal. All right, the prophets of Baal being apostate Protestantism that's rejecting the message of Elijah the prophet. And when the fire comes down, the true prophet is illustrated. The fire coming down proves that Elijah is the true prophet, and the fire that comes down in the Millerite history is the midnight cry. And it's in this history that apostate Protestantism begins its role as the false prophet of Bible prophecy, and it's in this history where Elijah and the Millerites are chosen as the true prophet, and they're being contrasted with the tribe of they're associated with the story of Ahab, the 10 northern tribes that are being set aside in this history, and Rehoboam's being chosen, Jerusalem's being chosen, Judah's being chosen, and this is prefiguring the choosing of the Millerites at the end of the world as God's people. And of course, the history of the Millerites repeated at the end of the world. So what I'm saying is the choosing of Jerusalem And Judah, in this history, has a ton of biblical support that the choosing itself is a significant aspect of prophecy. And then it moves in, first three kings to the last three kings. Jerusalem is destroyed, and who's Jerusalem destroyed by? The king of the north. So this fourth way mark is about the king of the north. All right. And from here we have the first three decrees, and we get to the fourth decree of Nehemiah, which is also an Artaxerxes decree, but Nehemiah, he finishes the streets and the walls in what? So he's prefiguring the troublous times of the fourth decree, of the fourth waymark, and the troublous time of the fourth waymark is the angering of the nations. It's Islam. Which brings us down here to the fourth waymark of the time of Christ, which is Pentecost. And Pentecost was the early rain for the church, and it's representing the latter rain for the end of the world. So what I'm saying is, and this is just an illustration of how this chain produces light, if all you do from this chain is take the fourth way mark and you identify some of the symbolism of each fourth way mark, what we've identified is this, and it's summarized on the bottom of page 7 in your notes. And what I'm saying is this will be the characteristics of the fourth angel's message at the end of the world down here. And the characteristics of the fourth angel's message have been identified in all of these fourth waymarks down through history. And this isn't all of them. But what we've identified is that the fourth angel's message will be the everlasting gospel. This is where the covenant is going to be entered into with the 144,000. And this is going to be a time of a shut door, both first for Adventism and then for the world. And judgment, the judgment of the flood, the judgment of the destruction of Jerusalem, judgment throughout it. This is the fall of Babylon, as represented by the fall of Jericho. And it takes place during the sounding of the seventh trumpet, which is the third woe. And it's the work is going to be carried on by self-supporting workers, not by the ordained workers, because Isaiah 28 says, with stammering lips and another tongue will he speak to this people. And the Lord is once again going to choose Jerusalem when he enters into covenant with those that are the ensign of Bible prophecy in the time period when the king of the north is conquering the world through his Sunday laws. And Islam is angering the nations, and the latter rain is falling. And the Sabbath and the most holy place are being lifted up. So the prophetic chain, rightly applied, produces light that's just overwhelming. And so what I'm saying here in conclusion, all of this has been to prepare for the conclusion of this study of Adventism's visitation, which will start on Sunday morning. But that the line of the tribe of Judah, the dirt brush man, began to open up the primary rule of prophecy for this generation in 1989, which is line upon line. And the line upon line are the links of the prophetic chain, of which the Millerites were given the commencement points and we were given the link. And by 1995, the line of the tribe of Judah had put this study into the public arena. And he confirmed it the same way that he confirmed the year-day principle for the Millerites with the restraint of Islam. With the restraint of Islam in 2001, it can be demonstrated so soundly and completely that the Millerite history is repeating. And that when the Millerite history had a restraint of Islam, the angel of Revelation 10 came down typifying that when Islam was restrained in 2001, the angel of Revelation 18 would come down. And here, the Alpha and Omega has put his signature into this record because he's saying the beginning of Adventism is illustrating the end of Adventism. But in order to logically defend the role of Islam in Bible prophecy, the Lord has to bring us back to these charts to find the Millerite logic for Islam. And when he does, when we look at these charts, we begin to look at Palmoni's work and the time prophecies. And Palmoni wasn't finished with the time prophecies. He had more to teach God's people about these prophecies. And we've been looking at a little bit of that. But by 2010, the Lion of the Tribe of Judah, the Dirt Brush Man, has put together a framework of the complete chain. This part's missing, no doubt about it, and it's not perfectly understood, no doubt about it. But there's enough of the chain by 2010 that Adventism is going to be held accountable for how they relate to the work of the Dirt Brush Man, the Lion of the Tribe of Judah, the Alpha and the Omega, and Palmoni. Father in heaven, we are amazed at the light that you've opened before your people here at the end of the world. And we're amazed at the darkness that is amongst your people as they fight against this light. We realize that this darkness that's upon your people has been prefigured and prophesied about throughout your word and throughout sacred history. But it nevertheless is just overwhelming on how God's people are unwilling to see that these things could not be invented by human beings, that this has the divine signature from beginning and end. Perhaps part of the reason that your people aren't seeing these things correctly is because as human beings, as the vessels that are trying to share this message, we have our imperfections and we prevented people from reasonably considering these things, and we ask that you'd forgive us for that if it's been our part, and that you'd give us wisdom and discernment how to present these things in a winning, clear way. And we ask that you'd provide for each of us divine appointments where we can give this final warning message to Adventism, because your message now is for Adventism. Your message for the world begins at the Sunday Law. And the time of Adventism's judgment is rapidly coming to a close. We ask that those divine appointments would be made, and that we would have the wisdom and discernment to recognize them. In Jesus' name, amen.